Welcome everyone to the Future of Real Estate Podcast. This is your host, Ellis Hammond. And on everyone's mind right now is, where are interest rates heading? What is the future of interest rates? But more importantly, what is the future of asset values, asset prices, especially in multifamily? And what should we be doing as a result of that? Should we be buying? Should we be selling? Should we be developing? So today I bring on Neil Bawa, who is well known across the industry as the mad scientist of multifamily. He is a technologist and is very serious about applying data across his whole portfolio and buying and purchasing decisions. And so you are going to get a great insider look on what he's looking at, what he's tracking, where he ultimately sees the market going as the Fed continues to increase interest rates, and his plan over the next 6 to 12 months. We talk about his flight from buying Class C properties to now moving and buying Class A properties, and what he's doing on the development side, and that's impact on both active and passive investors. I think you're going to get a ton out of this conversation, especially if you're seeking to place capital in real estate over the next 12 to 24 months. So let's get into the show, but first a word from our sponsor. Are you looking to add multifamily real estate to your portfolio? Symphony Capital Group, a private real estate equity group based in San Diego, California, makes it easy to get started investing in commercial real estate. Symphony Capital helps investors build wealth by providing passive investment shares to large, cash-flowing multifamily buildings across the country. Owning private real estate shares in these deals allows investors to own real estate without the hassle, but with all of the benefits, including tax write-offs, cash flow, and the large upside from appreciation typical in commercial real estate. If interested, head to symphonycapitalgroup.com and sign up as an accredited investor. Each deal is funded on a first-come, first-served basis and made available first to those who are signed up as investors. Symphony's focus on finding, funding, and managing real estate investment properties allows you to focus more time on the things you love. Head now to symphonycapitalgroup.com to get started. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Ellis.
Guys, it's a real pleasure to have Neil Bawa today. If you don't know him, you're living in a box, but he's well known around the industry as the mad scientist. He tracks a ton of data, and I'm very, very excited to have him on, as he's recently presented about around the future of interest rates. Has interviewed some of the industry leaders who also have a ton of data on this. And clearly, Neil, as you know, this is on everyone's mind. What is the future of interest rates? How much does this impact the future of real estate prices, especially multifamily? So I have read your bio, but why don't you give it a little bit of a current snapshot? I think a lot of people know who you are, but what about what you're up to right now? Because if I know you're doing so much in this industry, where is your focus? And I want to get into the future of interest rates today.
Sure. I'm a technologist, a nerd, a geek. I apply data science to real estate, have 5 different divisions: value add, super value add, new development, fourplex development, and I also actually run a company, a corporation that builds real estate. So it's a different kind of a spin, call it a startup, if you will. So 5 different divisions, and all of them really, really hyper-focused on the use of data in real time in real estate. And so that's what I do. I love having these kinds of conversations. I spend a great deal of time reaching out to industry leaders. I was on with Paul Peebles, who's in my mind, one of the brightest lending minds in the US, because he's so high volume and he's, you know, in Texas, which is kind of ground zero for value add. He has an incredible insight. So I spend a lot of time connecting with those folks and using that data with my portfolio. It's $1 billion, 30 projects, 800 investors. Invest in our projects. You know, the use of data science has been extraordinarily beneficial to us in producing what we believe are the highest IRRs in the industry.
Yeah, amazing. So Neil, let's kind of look at the landscape today. The Fed clearly has begun raising interest rates in order mm-hmm. to hedge inflation. Seems like we're going to be heading into a recession, a mm-hmm. technical recession at least, with 2 quarters of negative GDP growth.
Yep.
And you know, a lot of this, clearly this is, you know, it's impacting the industry for sure. I mean, we're under contract on a deal and it's amazing just how quick, like within a week, you know, debt markets have changed from being able to get 75 to 80% loan to cost. And now most debt lenders are providing 65% at the most.
Yep.
And so, you know, let's talk about what, you know, let's I mean, I guess we've already talked about what's kind of happening in the landscape, but what are you seeing from a data and number standpoint? Where do you see this going in terms of pricing for real estate? Let's kind of dive into this topic. What's the best way to start?
Well, I'm going to give you a few statements and then I'll back it up with data, right? So the multifamily value add industry where you're buying 60s, 70s, 80s product, and also some of the new construction industry, though not all, is in full stop mode. We are currently in full stop mode, very, very heavy retrading is going on for assets that basically are going to contract at this point. Cap rates have not been affected. So if you're hearing from Marcus and Millichap, if you're hearing from Berkadia, that is all completely useless information because they're talking about properties that went into contract in January and February where money had gone hard, half a million, a million. And so those people basically somehow managed to get those properties through. Today, cap rates have decompressed. They've already decompressed by 0.5 cap compared to what I called the two greatest quarters in history. So in multifamily, if you go back 100 years, the greatest quarters of all time were last year in Q4 and this year in Q1. Those are the Goldilocks quarters where everything was right. Now, towards the end of Q1, things started falling off, but I'm talking about properties that basically closed in those quarters, not went into contract in those quarters. So the greatest quarters of all time, you take the cap rates for a multifamily. Today, if a property is going into contract, right, today is June 8th, it's half a cap higher and heading towards 0.75 cap. Spreads for lenders, highest in history. Rate caps, most expensive in history. As you already mentioned, loan to values, some lenders going as low as 60%, others going to 65%. No one is interested in 70 and 75%. This is all temporary, but there's a hard stop for the industry right now.
So it's all temporary, you say. Why, explain that statement.
So what's really happening is that sellers take 3 to 6 months to adjust to a new reality. So what's happening is that, you know, sellers were still in their mind thinking, oh, you know, look at what happened to this property that closed in Q1, right? That closed in Q1. Well, you know, he got 183,000 a unit, so I should get 183,000 a unit or more. And so sellers have priced accordingly. Buyers came in, basically made bids, not knowing about this 65% rate caps going crazy kind of stuff that's happening, made bids, went into contract, and many of them are not hard yet on the money. And they realize the property is unviable. I'm going to have negative cash flow. I'm going to have minus two, minus three, minus six cash flow. And now there's going to be this crazy retrading process. And that retrading process, basically, the industry works through it. It's happened before. This is not the first, the second, the third time that you hit a hard stop. And then 3, 4, 5 months down the line, expectations readjust. Like, for example, my new construction property, 97% occupied in Q4 last year, was worth 46 million. Today it's worth 38, right? And at 38, I'm still making 35 IRR. So I'm pretty happy with the property, but I was going to make 55 IRR. And I missed the window by 2 months because the war started. My property was already, at the time that the war started, was in best and final. And the moment the war started, everyone's like, we need some more time. So we gave them some more time. Best and final got pushed out 2 weeks. Property value fell by $7 million, right? And so we yanked it off the market because I'm like, I know this is temporary. When I say temporary, though, I will, to get back to that $45 million valuation, now I have to wait for 18 to 24 months. Right? Because, and I'll tell you why the other piece of it, why it's temporary, right? So there's this feeling in the industry today, people kind of go from black to white, which is nonsensical, right? Everything's always gray. Black doesn't exist, white doesn't exist. You're always operating in a gray zone. Here's data that I think instantly will make people feel better. Since 1961, the Federal Reserve has hiked rates to contain inflation 9 times. So there have been 9 hiking cycles. All 9 of these cycles, with one sort of exception, were sharp up, sharp down, no plateau. So imagine a mountain peak. So the Fed is going sharp up with rates. And when it does sharp up with rates, what the Fed basically does is it gut punches the US economy, right? Its intent, the intent of the Fed is, I'm going to punch Ellis so hard that all the wind is knocked out of Ellis, but Ellis doesn't die. He doesn't fall over, right? I still want Ellis to be standing. So what they do is they calculate as many hikes as they can get away with without putting the economy into a recession. They want to basically take us to zero growth. Right now, GDP is very strong. Well, actually, wasn't very strong for this quarter, but previous quarters was very strong. And so they're gut punching the economy, figuring out how to get to zero growth. Now, when that happens, inflation falls very rapidly because demand is destroyed. And then guess what the Fed does? They don't sit at the top of that mountain of interest rates for more than 2 or 3 months. So the last nine times, all the way going back to 1961, that plateau at the top is either 1 month or 3 to 4 months. And then it's sharp down because now they're trying to save the economy from a recession. What I mean? So we are in the sharp up process, which ends most likely in November, maybe in December. And then we get the 3 month plateau, which is Q1 of next year. And then we go sharp down. And so late next year, let's call it Q4, we're in the sharp down process. So the exact reverse happens. Buyer spreads are reducing. So buyers are, lenders are charging less. And they're going up from 65 to 70, 75%. And interest rates are dropping. So now mortgage lenders are getting more aggressive because they know the rates are going to drop further as the Fed, drops rates further. Right. So now you have a window in Q4 next year to basically start getting the same sort of cap rates that you're getting now, or at least close to them. And that's what's really going to happen. But for the moment, everything looks horrible because if you're in contract right now, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, from an investor standpoint, and you look at the next 12 to 18 months, do you see a buying window or an opportunity to maybe buy properties at a slight discount? It's not like asset prices are being slashed in half. We're talking a 5 to maybe 15% reduction, right? Maybe on a 5% or maybe what'd you say? You said about 100 basis point or 50 basis point cap rate expansion.
50 to 75, depending on the market, right? So right. Some markets were like overheated. Those will go down 0.75% because they were in the low threes, right? So now they're going to adjust towards four. And if the markets were mid threes, they might, still only adjust to four. So you might see a 50 to 75 basis point, which basically translates to that, maybe 6-7% to 15% discount.
And so do you see that as a buying opportunity? And if so, is there a flight? I've heard this term a lot, and a flight to quality, meaning you're going to move towards purchase. Does it change what you go and look for in terms of assets to acquire over the next 12 to 18 months?
Absolutely. So the short answer is there isn't a buying opportunity today. Today, there's panic. So I have to wait for 1, 2, or 3 months for spreads to change, buyers, for lenders to start going back to 70, 75 again, because if I buy too soon, I'm going to be stuck with 65, 70% loans. I want to go back to 70 or 75, right? Sometimes you get 75, but mostly you get 70 these days. So point is, not too much of a hurry, but maybe get into contract 2 to 3 months from now. Please note that all institutional players are pencil down. At this point in time, if you go to an IMN conference, the word pencil down is probably the most popular word, but none of them are saying we will not buy properties, 1 quarter or 2 quarters from now. Everybody's like, I love what's happening. It's pretty awesome. The market was going completely batshit crazy. And now there's a level, a semblance of reality that comes back to the marketplace. So everyone's looking forward to buying. No one wants to buy in this quarter because spreads are crazy and LTVs are mad. Right. So we want to wait for X number of months for those two things to adjust and also for pricing to adjust. And then I think that buying the dip is a great idea. To answer the second part of your question, it makes 100% sense to go to flight to quality. And I'm going to give you data now. As you know, Ellis, and I think you're in the same boat as me, we love classy properties, right? Because classy, there's been more headroom. So from 2014 to 2021, 7 years, classy properties in the US were the king of the hill in terms of rent growth, in terms of, rehab-based, forced rental appreciation. In 2021, that changed. In the last 12 months, Class A and Class B properties have gone up in rents by 15.3%. 15.3% increase in rents. Class C have gone up by 7.3%. Now you might say, why? I mean, normally it's always Class C winning over Class B and Class A. And the answer is yes, that was our experience from 2014 to 2021. Our experience has changed. So something radical must have changed in the Class C market, right? The answer is yes. most metros in the US have hit 40% of tenant income going to rent or higher. So we now have most metros in the US that are pretty bubbly, hot, Atlanta, you know, and Phoenix. A Class C tenant is now paying 40 to 50% of their income in rent. And what we see is that if a landlord tries to push up rents, you know, harder, faster than inflation, faster than what they should be getting, they get massive delinquency in the Class C space. Remember, an average Class C tenant has $400 in the bank after paying rent. $400 in the bank. That's their total net worth. And because of that, when you push beyond that 40% level into the high 40s, you're either not going to be able to push rents or you're going to get delinquency, which is just as bad. So now we've seen Class C rent growth move down. There is a flight to safety. B and A make sense. We also sense a recession coming in the next, you know, 9 to 12 months. I think most people believe a technical 6-month US recession, which we've seen 7 times out of those 9 hiking cycles, we've seen that is going to happen. Well, you know, Bs are usually the safest place in a recession. It's not A, it's not C. Bs tend to perform best. So there's a lot of flight to B.
Yeah, and I think, and let me just kind of throw out an assumption here and talking about flight to quality, I think everyone's moving to that because the reality is we're buying in Dallas, for example. North Dallas, very affluent, medium income is over 100 grand. The occupancy rate across every garden style asset is 98%, meaning, and then you have, you know, you have a labor like a supply restriction, meaning because cost is so expensive, labor's restrictive. So there's not as much supply coming to market over the next 12 to 24 months as expected. You know, I'm looking at a slide you had in your last presentation. If you're selling at a 4 cap and the price is worth $30 million, well, you can go up to a 4.5 cap as long as rent bumps are up 10%. And I'm looking at a market like Dallas and realizing, I think our revenue is going to go up way more than 10%, regardless of a recession, because there's literally no supply and we're still in a decently affordable market. We're buying nicer assets. Challenge that assumption or agree with that assumption, but I'd love to have a conversation around that.
Well, I like the way you structured it because you said the magic word for me was I'm in a market with $100,000, you know, salaries. What that means is you've got headroom in your market for your rents to go up because of lack of supply. What I'm seeing is there's Class C markets with lack of supply still not going up because, you know, the tenants already at 50% of their income right. Going to rent and they can't push any further. So if you have the right markets and you've got, you know, supply slowing down because buildings are not delivering, my buildings have been delayed because of, you know, both COVID and also because of construction cost increases. So that's slowing my pipeline down. My 2-year pipeline is now my 3-year pipeline, right? So you kind of see how that impacts somebody like Ellis that's buying in these areas. So, you know, do I think that you'll get 10% rent growth in the next year? I don't, because I'm seeing the rental market month over month slowing down. But do I think that you'll get 6 or 7 or 8% rent growth in a market like Dallas, which, you know, obviously is the absorption leader in the US? Yes, you could. And so you can still get there. But here's the cool thing, Ellis, if you wait long enough, if you wait 3 months, you know, in my example, I'd said, okay, you know, you're buying something for $30 million in Jan, you're now buying it for $26 million, but you can still buy it at 26 and still get that rent growth. So you can have your cake and eat it too. You can get the lower, you know, lender spreads as the lenders stop panicking and the market starts to adjust. So to me, I think it's really about 4 months, 5 months from now, putting properties in contract where buyer expectations have adjusted, lenders have calmed down.
Or seller expectations have adjusted.
Seller expectations right. Have adjusted because the buyers have already adjusted.
Right, yeah.
It's a wonderful time, right? You're buying that dip. It's 6 to 15% depending upon the market. And then you're still getting that rent growth from the lack of supply because I think lumber costs have just started to come down. Construction costs will moderate over the next year, year and a half, which means construction delivery doesn't really resume at this level for 2 years. So you've got time to raise rents as long as your tenants have room up based on their salaries.
Let me ask you just, I want to dive into that real quick. Construction, you know, because you're in it, you're developing assets as well. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assumption to say that things are being pushed out an extra 12 to 24 months in terms of new supply coming to a market based in your experience and what you're doing? Why can you explain why that is being said and kind of what's happening in the construction industry in terms of multifamily?
Number one is construction costs in the US, so in 2019 is a perfect example, right? So 2019, 2020, construction costs in the US went up 4%. So slightly higher than inflation, but no big deal, right? 2021, construction costs in the US went up 12%. This year looks like a 10%, 12% year. So when that happens, all the budgets, all the pro formas that had been designed need to be redone. And as the market contracts and interest rates go up, now you've got, higher lending costs. So now you have to go back and get more equity. That slows you down. COVID has also slowed down the pipeline because cities are taking twice the amount of time to give you permits. So what's happening is we were actually overbuilding in the 2019 timeframe where we had, the delivery was threatening to end the party for value adds. Well, that fear has now gone away because of the construction cycle going from, 36-month apartment construction to 42 months and or longer. So I wouldn't agree on the 24-month delay, but I think that there's a 12-month delay in major markets where, properties are taking 12 months longer to build and deliver. And as a result of that, multifamily value add basically gets a breather because we were just about approaching the point where there was too much delivery and that would have caused rents to come down. But because of COVID, because of construction cost increases, inflation, and now interest rate increases, we've got another year to 2 years before we can say, hey, there's overbuilding.
Excellent, excellent information. You've always been an expert on markets. Before we get out of here today, I'm just curious on market states that you're really focused in and kind of what you're doing in those markets specifically.
I love lots of different markets. I invest in 10 states, so I keep a tab on those particular 10 states. My biggest feedback is at this point of time, Florida is terrific, and so is Texas. Georgia's slowing a little bit, so is North Carolina. So I think those two are in my top four, but slowing. So, on the watch list, Florida appears to be accelerating and has been a huge beneficiary of people moving from the Northeast. Rich people moving, right? Florida's always had lots of people moving there, but I always was a critic of Florida because I said, when poor people move to Florida, it doesn't really help us, right? But during the pandemic, very rich people moved to Florida, massively rich people from their Connecticut mansions, their New York condos, they moved to Florida and didn't go back. And so as a state, Florida changed the most during the pandemic. So I think there's room there. Now, for the moment, I'm buying nothing in Florida. Miami, Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa, all too expensive. I'm waiting for seller expectations to adjust. But beyond that time, Florida makes sense more so than it did a year ago. And Texas is definitely a very close second.
Yeah. Last question before we get out of here today. I just want to kind of look project into August and Fed. We started with interest rates. Let's end with interest rates, kind of a projection here. Fed predicts there will be SOFR at somewhere to 200 basis points. And for anyone who don't know, SOFR is an index that lenders use. They typically give you a spread of 300 or 400 points plus SOFR. So if a lender quotes you 400 points plus SOFR and SOFR is at 200, that means your interest rate is going to be 400 plus 200. So you get a 6% interest rate. So we're assuming the Fed's going to buy August, multiple meetings till then. Let's just assume we're at 200. We've been quoted anywhere from a 395 to a 475 spread, which would put interest rates over north of six. Do you think it's still like, and let's say to your assumption, cap rates adjust by 50 basis points, meaning in a market like Dallas, we're now in the mid fours. If interest rates are still above six, we have cap rates still in the mid fours. They do adjust. That's a pretty significant price adjustment, by the way, from a 3.8 to a 4.5% cap rate. We're still in a market that's growing by 10 to 15% in rental growth, it seems. But you're still upside down. So in your mind, because I've heard, just for example, the reason I bring this up, I was in a room, and I am in a room with a lot of family office groups. And half the room saying no way because that property is upside down. The other half saying, well, there's still tons of growth happening in these markets from a revenue standpoint. It makes sense. Give me your thoughts on that before we get out of here today.
I think the velocity will slow, but there are still going to be buyers who are going to come in and say, hey, we're buying the dip and we're going to figure out a way to do it. So you're going to see more institutional action because they have the ability to take a lower LTV and avoid the upside down. They also have the ability to be upside down more. So what you're going to see is syndication companies will slow down and you'll see institutionals pick up, because institutionals, their biggest driver is price, right? They're not looking at cash flow. They don't particularly care about cash flow. They're looking at, hey, I'm getting a lower price per door, even though rents are going up. And so I'm going to make it up on the back end. These are funds with, you know, $500 million in the bank. They're fully, they don't have to go back to their investors and sell a project because they already have $500 million. They make their own decisions. So you're going to see larger players come back into the marketplace when prices go down, even if properties technically are upside down. So a challenging situation. So be aware that those people that are sitting on the sidelines, they're going to inject more money in because they're per door based.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing distinction. And I do think, like, if you have patient capital, even as a syndicator, you know, what Neil just said is something to pay attention to, because over the next 6 to 8 months, there will be significantly less buyers in the market. And so if you have capital that can be patient with you and maybe not expect the 18 to 20% IRRs, but will take less because we're still in great assets, as we've talked about today, there may be a great buying opportunity over the next 6 months to be aware of.
Right. So Ellis, what I would say is, because you have a syndication community, now is a great time to educate your investors on why it makes sense to be buying assets 4 months, 5 months from now, even though the cash flow is going to be lower in the first year or so, because you're getting significant capital appreciation there. Right. So I think that the market was improperly priced, but I think that the market obviously going forward has to look at future rent growth to look at per price door. And so I feel like educating your investors to be patient is really the key.
Yeah. Excellent. Neil, always an amazing conversation. What are you putting out right now? Like, where can folks go to kind of follow that along in this tumultuous environment?
Well, so we have three or four very, very good, webinars that discuss this, give you examples. If you are watching on video, go to Multifamily University behind me. That's multifamilyu.com. And also, this is not a bad time to look at new construction, because you're jumping over the entire cycle. Construction rates haven't adjusted as much. So I just signed a $21 million construction loan at 4% fixed. So they haven't adjusted much because of the way that the construction market works. They will adjust, they'll go up. So it's a good time to look at new construction as well, because you're jumping over the recession, because you're delivering post-recession.
Got it. Yeah, makes sense. And so Multifamily U is probably the best place to point folks to.
Multifamilyu.com is the best place to engage with us. We have some incredible content coming out of the pipeline in the next month or so. The best thing you can do is watch the entire 45-minute impact of interest rates on real estate webinar that came out last week. That's a great place to start.
Excellent. Neil, thank you again for your time, man. Guys, make sure you go follow Neil. And as always, please share this content if you enjoyed it. Help us get the message out about this show. That's why we do it. Appreciate you guys. Neil, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Alice. Bye-bye.
All right.